Good morning. It is Sunday, May 11th, Mother's Day. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF will air a live broadcast of Mozart in the Museum from Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, May 28th at 8 p.m. This live radio broadcast is part of the 2014 Artisphere Festival and will feature the Artisphere Festival Orchestra with Corrado Riveras, music director. The event is made possible in part by contributing listeners of KUAF Public Radio.
Ahead on Weekend Ozarks, we talk with the duo Still on the Hill about their new CD and its inspiration, Beaver Lake. Plus, we learn about the recipe for Gunder pickles. A great-grandson is turning a family tradition into quite the spear.
Plus, we'll honor the 100th anniversary of Mother's Day in our Sunday morning montage, a song from Cleta Scottshaw recorded inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio, and more.
But first, as many weeks go, the past one was rife with news. Ozarks at Largest Timothy Dennis has more in this week's Week in Review.
Early voting began this week in Arkansas for primary and judicial elections. Several primaries across the state have been hotly contested. A new poll from Talk Business Arkansas and Hendricks College came out this week, and it shows front runners in some of those races. Roby Brock of Talk Business and Politics says that French Hill has a big lead over Conrad Reynolds and Ann Klimmer in the 2nd Congressional District GOP primary.
Hill is over the 50% mark in the poll, and so there is a good chance that he wins that primary election without a runoff, although there's still time for Reynolds and Klimmer to make a dent in his big lead and pull him below that 50% threshold. In the 4th Congressional District, there's just two candidates in the Republican primary, Bruce Westerman and Tommy Maul. Westerman has a very sizable lead over Maul, 47-10%. 43% still undecided, but it does look like Westerman is in the driver's seat in that race and will likely be the Republican nominee from the 4th.
Meanwhile, the same poll found that Arkansas Republicans are overwhelmingly opposed to the private option. 54% of those polled oppose the private option, which uses federal Medicaid dollars to buy private insurance for low-income Arkansans. 23% favor the program enacted last year by the state legislature, while 24% said they didn't know. President Obama made his first visit to Arkansas as the chief executive this week. He promised Arkansans in areas devastated by tornadoes 2 weeks ago that the federal government will be there to help them rebuild. The president toured a hard-hit neighborhood in Valonia, meeting residents, first responders, and emergency workers.
You know, more than any disaster, it is that dedication and that commitment to each other that truly defines this town. As one resident said, we just say a prayer and then get to work. So the people of Valonia and all the other towns devastated by the storm understand there's a lot of work that remains to be done, but I'm here to remind them that they're not doing this work alone. Your country's going to be here for you. We're going to support you every step of the way. You are in our thoughts and prayers.
The president was joined for the tour by Governor Mike Beebe, Congressman Tim Griffin, and Senator Mark Pryor. Governor Beebe praised the response by the federal government.
Right now they're doing what they should be doing. You recall, I think, how critical I was of FEMA back in 07 when I thought they were woefully inadequate after the Dumas tornado. But since then, they've done a great job. And so if I'm going to bust them out for doing a bad job, I need to acknowledge when they do a good job, and they're doing a good job.
Even earlier in the week, though, Governor Beebe joined officials with Verizon Wireless to announce a considerable expansion of jobs throughout Arkansas. Ginger Darrell with Verizon said current openings reflect significant growth in business and need for tech support.
The majority of the 285 positions are in the Little Rock Call Center, but we do have sales positions that are opening in Little Rock and Northwest Arkansas.
The hiring process has already begun. An open house for job candidates was held Friday at Verizon's regional headquarters in Little Rock. State finance officials told legislators this week that trends in revenue collections and economic forecasts don't warrant any adjustment in the official revenue forecast for fiscal years 2014 or 2015. Department of Finance and Administration Deputy Director Tim Leathers said one reason adjustments aren't necessary is because Arkansas correctly anticipated the impact of federal tax changes by reducing related revenue projections.
I think we're pretty close on target. Unlike a lot of other states we're seeing around the country that didn't do that for whatever reason, we don't know. And now they're having a shortfall as a result of it and having to deal with that. And there'll be more reports of that as they close out their fiscal years. All of them don't report on the month. But the states that didn't realize that or chose to ignore that are suffering at this time. So we did not do that.
The sparsely attended joint meeting of the Economic and Tax Policy Committees generated a few questions about the expected surplus at the end of the fiscal year. Finance officials didn't give a firm estimate, but suggested it may be between $50 and $70 million. The 70th annual Rodeo of the Ozarks will be held in just less than 2 months at Springdale's Parsons Stadium. Plans to renovate the stadium moved forward last week after the city's planning commission approved the development plans, which will be considered by city aldermen later this month. Rick Culver is on the board of directors for the Rodeo of the Ozarks, and he says the expansion plans would involve extensive renovations to Parsons Stadium.
We're going to have new bleachers and chutes will be on the west side. We're going to cover the whole arena. It won't be enclosed, but it'll be covered. We're also at the north end. We'll have a new office complex, which will have a museum, have our ticket office, have meeting rooms that we can rent out, and have a restaurant and our buckle club area will be there where we serve the dinners for that. And then there'll be a new buckle club area that'll be on the east side above the chutes when we get this all done. We'll have paved parking. It's just going to be a total upgrade.
The expansion project will also involve building a connection to the Razorback Greenway, which will eventually run along the west side of the rodeo grounds. All told, Culver says that the project will probably cost roughly $17 million and that a capital campaign will soon get underway. While he admits that that's a large amount of money to raise, Culver says that when the project is complete, the stadium will be able to host a wider range of events as the covered stadium won't dampen eventgoers' spirits during inclement weather. From the Harold and Blanche Kalk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Each month, we take a look at foods that are made right here in our own region on the program. Now, the pickle moved out of Atkins, Arkansas over a decade ago, but as Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda recently learned, a great-grandson is reviving a family recipe in the hopes of becoming the next big dill.
Family recipes are often passed down from generation to generation. Maybe your grandmother taught you her mother's apple pie recipe. Or maybe your dad is well known for using his father's chili recipe during the holidays. Fayetteville native Garrett Gunderson is carrying on his great-grandmother's pickle recipe in the form of his business venture, Gunder Pickles.
My entire life I've kind of just been making pickles with my dad. Just not ever thinking anything, you know, of it. And, you know, when I'd bring friends over and my dad would ask them if they like pickles and they'd say, of course. And he'd open a jar and say, try these. And they'd be like, man, these are the best pickles I've ever had in my life. And I just was just like, eh, whatever, they're pickles. They're pickles. So one Thanksgiving, about 2 years ago, something like that, I made a jar for my neighbors. And next thing I knew, I had to make 2 cases, and it's just kind of taken off from there.
Garrett says his family dates the recipe at about 1903, but it could be a little older than that. At that time, he says his family was living in a small town in South Dakota called Mobridge.
Back then, you know, there weren't any refrigeration. There was no freezers. It was just cellars and, you know, you'd bury things. And so this process was just a pickling, was a stone pickle, like a big stone crock, like those ones over here. Actually, you should probably see them like that. Like the Red Wing crocks you find in old antique stores, it was that process. So they would fill it up with fresh cucumbers and fresh dill out of the garden and a bunch of salt and whatever else they want to throw in there. And they'd stir it up and they'd put a wood lid on it. And they'd say, don't touch these for 5 days. And that was kind of how this pickling process is. It's the exact same thing, but I'm putting them in jars for people instead.
Garrett fills mason jars with his pickles. Having made them for most of his life, he makes the process look so easy. After unscrewing the lid, he places the empty mason jar on top of a silver metal tabletop.
First thing we'll do is we'll put all of our seasonings in. That way, when we're ready, we'll shake it all up and it'll kind of look like a snow globe of seasonings.
Glancing at the recipe, which is typed out on a white sheet of paper that looks like it's been folded and unfolded a couple of times, Garrett starts measuring different spices and adding them to the jar. Among other things, he mixes in white pickling salt, garlic, celery seed, red pepper, and fresh dill.
Now, the true difference between my pickles and any other pickles is this. Fresh dill. Because when you look at Claussen or Vlasic or any other company, they don't have this. And this, to me, I believe is what sells it or what makes it. People say it's the crunchiness. People say it's the flavor. I truly believe it's the dill. It's the big dill.
Now Garrett's ready to prepare the cucumbers. They're too tall for the jars, so Garrett cuts off a portion of the cucumbers so they can fit. These leftover pieces can be used to make pickle slices later. Given the choice between slices or spears, I choose spears. Garrett then sets a silver metal contraption on the table. Four legs support the circular base of the machine, which contains metal spear shapes in the middle of it. A second circular plate slides up two poles to make room for a cucumber, which is placed on top of the base. The top plate is then used to push the cucumber over the protruding metal shapes at the bottom of the machine, slicing the cucumber into spears.
This is a spear. So basically my cucumbers will go in here. There it is. And I'll make spears, like that.
After making spears out of three cucumbers, Garrett shoves as many of them as he can into the jar.
I just try to get it as full as possible. When you look at other, you know, jars of pickles, there's like a half inch of brine just floating on the bottom. It's like, well, that's just, I mean, that's just a waste. I might be a little pricey on my prices, but it's the best quality you can get.
That price, by the way, is $10 for a quart-sized jar. After screwing the lid back onto the mason jar, Garrett offers one last bit of instruction.
Now, my dad, he swears my great-grandmother told him, when you make these in jars, you gotta flip it upside down, see how it's all cloudy and salty and all that? Shake it. Where that goes away. And then he says, I don't know if this is true, and it probably is, I don't know. He says, when you put this in the refrigerator, every time you open that refrigerator, you turn it.
Upside down.
Every time. Every time you go in the fridge, he says, turn it upside down. And then turn it right side up. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't have time to do that with 12 cases of cucumbers, but he swears by it.
Garrett uses a black Sharpie to write a date on top of the lid. It's 7 days from now, and that's the day I can take the pickles out of the refrigerator and they'll be ready to eat. For now, Garrett sells his pickles at Mickey Finn's Irish Pub in Fayetteville, where he bartends. His pickles are also served at Cafe Rue Orleans and Apple Blossom Brewing Company. Garrett would like to grow his business and perhaps one day have a small storefront or even sell his pickles in stores, although he would likely stay away from a big chain store because he thinks mass producing his product might cause its quality to suffer. He says he's concerned with quality because there's so much junk out there.
I mean, growing up, you know, you just think a pickle is a pickle. You think a pickle is a Vlasic pickle or Mount Olive. And I'm not saying these companies are bad, but these companies are just mass producing pickles. And yeah, they're generic, but who wants generic when you can have something just fresh? When you open it, you can smell it. You can just taste it. When you grab a pickle and you put it in your mouth, for the next 30 minutes, your hand smells like pickles. You know, that's what a true pickle is. It's not something that has yellow water. You don't know what's in it. I'm not a fan of that.
Garrett says people seem to enjoy his family's pickles, so he plans to keep making them until they don't. He says his two favorite things about his business are seeing people smile when they eat his pickles, and then when people say they taste just like their grandmother's pickles.
It's just good. It's just good product. It's just fun. How can you not have fun when you eat a pickle? And, I mean, you literally, it's a pickle. It's vinegary. It has flavor to it. It's beautiful.
Garrett will have his pickles for sale May 18th during the Block Street Block Party in Fayetteville. To find out more about ordering pickles or some of Garrett's other offerings, such as green beans, okra, or sauerkraut, visit facebook.com/GunderPickles.
That was Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda.
Back in April, Eric and Charlotte Kaufman were sailing to New Zealand with their 3-year-old and their 1-year-old, and they made international news when they got into trouble in the open seas. This week on This American Life, they give their first interview about what happened. Cracks in their hull and water leaking in and their satellite phone failing. They had 2 radios but couldn't tell if they were working or not. Their baby's sick, and they have to decide whether to abandon ship. Literally abandon ship. That's this week.
Listen Sunday at 10 a.m. to 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. According to Merriam-Webster, community is a group of people who live in the same area, or a group of people who have the same interests, like religion, race. Community differs greatly from person to person, from school to work, to home and family. A year-long project at Fayetteville High School explored the theory, concept, and idea of community. The project was part of the University of Arkansas's College of Education's Adopt a Classroom program. This program is funded by a grant from the Arkansas Department of Education and places a U of A professor in an area classroom one day a month for an entire school year, with the aim of connecting students to college and what they learn to the real world. The program is designed to go into K-12 classrooms across 27 districts. This particular community program worked with juniors and seniors at FHS. It was led by Kevin Fitzpatrick, Jones Chair of Community and Family at the U of A.
It gives people like me an opportunity to see something that I don't ever get a chance to see, and that's inside a high school classroom. And newfound respect for secondary school teachers.
The project, entitled How Do You See Community?, began last October when Fitzpatrick first stepped into 5 different sociology classes to teach them about issues related to community, specifically focusing on Northwest Arkansas and quality of life issues. The project concluded last week with an open house showcasing the students' work, photographs exhibiting what community looks like through each pair of eyes. Fitzpatrick says he communicated with the high schoolers a bit differently than he does his college students.
In terms of getting them to understand issues related to community and what that concept means and how that concept looks differently to different people, because I think if you look at all these pictures, you see that there's 100 different lenses out there that are really capturing for us what our community looks like, and I don't think you can get that any other way.
He says he started this project with a sociological approach by introducing the way community is thought about. He then provided some important issues. He says there was a lot of conversation about the key components to community. Fitzpatrick says he spends more time just talking in front of a classroom at the college. Here, there was an open dialogue in which the students were allowed to formulate their own ideas.
We didn't tell them. We didn't want to in some way impact their view about community too much, because we knew we wanted to go out there, have them go out there and take pictures. So if we told them too much about what to think or how to see community, it would definitely color their perspective.
So the teachers were careful to talk about community in sociological, political, and geographical terms. Fitzpatrick wanted the students to take their own pictures and not their teachers. High school photography teacher came into the sociology classes to give a brief tutorial on how to capture a good picture. Fitzpatrick says he was impressed with the quality of photos the students captured, many of which were done so with an iPhone or other smartphone camera. He doesn't believe that they would have taken these photographs in October, based on what their ideas of community were then. They've evolved over time.
I look at these pictures and, to be able to get some of these pictures where they are now, I'm not sure that that would have happened necessarily, a month into it. So, I'd like to think that Ms. Hires and myself, between the two of us, spent enough time with the kids talking about the key concepts and the whole idea of what captures community, that, part of this is an evolution in that educational experience.
Suki Hires is the sociology teacher at FHS. And she's taken the sociology course far from its two-section textbook beginning to a five-section class that has become a very popular elective. Hires has previously worked with Fitzpatrick on the One Book, One Community project a couple of years ago. So letting him adopt her classroom was easy.
I enjoyed having him come in and talk to the kids, and it's nice for them to get to know that university professors aren't all ogres, that they're human beings, they're right across the street. We need to form a better connection between these two education systems.
She says this community project fit perfectly into her survey of sociology curriculum. This project brought it all together, as well as bringing the arts integration aspect into it through the photography. Heyer says, according to her students, community was a concept they hadn't consciously thought about until her course. But over time, they came to many realizations.
Well, for one thing, that place matters and where they come from has an impact on who they are, which is a key idea of sociology. But by going out into our community and kind of looking at these ideas, have pulled together their own personal view of what community is. And I think a lot of them also realize that my view of community may be different from the person next to me. So just kind of understand that we all have these varied viewpoints, these different perspectives.
Jenny Bryan is a senior sociology student who signed up for the course because a friend told her she had many similarities to Ms. Hires. Not knowing much about sociology when she began back in August, the course has turned into one of her favorites and something she now understands.
It is the study of people and how people interact with each other and what's around you, and it's really made me pay more attention to people around me and people watching and observing what people do around each other, and it's gotten me into making people uncomfortable. And we did this whole project where we had to break social norms and do things in public that people don't normally do.
She says it was funny to realize that people act a certain way and to then mess that up and see their reactions. She says her vision of community has also changed throughout the year. She's even changed her own community, allowing her to come out of her shell a bit.
My community before this year was in this tight-knit group of two or three people, and this year taking different classes and talking to different people and becoming friends with more people, I have broaden my own community and gotten to know people that are different from me and people from all over the place, and so my community is a lot bigger and not really what I would have perceived it to be 2 years ago. I wouldn't see myself being friends with these people and these people and doing all these different things, but now I'm here and I really like it and I don't want to leave.
With graduation next week, Jenny will be leaving, heading to the University of Georgia, where she will find a new community. We make our way through a crowd of students and parents to the wall where Jenny's picture hangs among the other photographs taken by students in her first period sociology class. Part of the assignment was to caption and title the picture.
I titled it Entwined, and I said this represents community because of the universality of the sky, and no matter where we are, everyone shares the same sky. And it's kind of cheesy, but when I took that picture, I was hammocking in the park with my friends, and it's just a nice place to go, and it's a bonding experience, and that's a place that I do go a lot, and that a lot of my friends go a lot, and a lot of different types of people go there, and I just find it to be very peaceful and a place that is accessible from to everyone.
The photo was taken from the position of lying in her hammock, indus of the branches and trees intertwining overhead in the evening twilight. Though she had tried to intentionally take photos for the project, this one happened inadvertently, natural being the way to go. The U of A took control of the processing and printing of the photographs for judging and display here this evening. Each student in each class had a chance to win a cash prize for first, second, or third place out of their respective classes. So there were 15 winners total. Judges were the FHS photography teacher, plus two professors and two graduate students in the sociology department at the U of A. Jenny didn't know until this evening that her picture had earned her third place in her class and $25. Kevin Fitzpatrick announced the winners in front of the group of students and parents last week.
How about third place Jenny Bryan? Jenny, you got it?
This is Ozarks at Large.
Good morning. It's Sunday, May 11th, 2014. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca. Oh, and by the way, happy Mother's Day. And with us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you. He just stole my thunder. I was going to tell you all happy Mother's Day, but I will anyway.
You, of course. You can't say that too many times.
Exactly. And we have coming attractions, some today, some later in the week. Things you can take mom out to or mom can take herself. Today is the Terra Music Festival at Terra Studios east of Fayetteville. Admission is free. Mm-hmm. Starts at noon, and there are five bands scheduled to play. Fernando Valencia, New Highway, Heirloom, which, as I said Friday, is my current favorite band. Jesse Dean and Candy Lee. Admission is free, but you can make a donation to the Using Art to Create a Better World organization. Also this afternoon, the last performance of Cinderella Confidential. Anything Jules Taylor's involved with, you know it's going to be amazing. This is a Trike Theater production, a surprising version of the classic tale of Cinderella as told through interviews by two rival investigative reporters. How can you miss? The last show is at 2 o'clock today at White Auditorium at Northwest Arkansas Community College in Bentonville, and tickets are $10 to $12. Coming up this week, The Adventures of Alvin Sputnik, Deep Sea Explorer.
This is part of Artisphere, correct?
I saw that, yeah. And I'm curious, so tell me about it.
It is a puppet show created by puppeteer Tim Watts, who is from Australia. And the production combines technology and multimedia in a story about love and the end of the world.
All right.
Okay. It will be performed Tuesday through Thursday and again on Saturday in Star Theater at Walton Arts Center. As part of Artisphere, it's been described as a theatrical WALL-E.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. Showtimes are 7 Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, 2 to 8 on Saturday, and tickets are $6. Also coming up, Trey McIntyre will be in town.
Also part of Artisphere.
And the company will be all over the place. 6:30 Tuesday for the Suburban Sphere in Wilson Park. 7 o'clock Wednesday for the Nature Film and Dance event at Crystal Bridges in Bentonville, and at 8 o'clock on Friday as part of the 10 by 10 art series at Walton Arts Center, and that's the only ticketed event. Tickets are $10 to $25.
Very good.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I'm sitting on the train to my city picture. Passenger car explodes.
Sam Baker almost died when terrorists bombed the train he was riding in. After multiple surgeries, he began writing songs. On the next Fresh Air Weekend, Sam Baker talks about his life and music. Join us.
Listen this evening at 6 to 91.3 FM.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. The duo Still on the Hill has a new CD arriving soon, and Kelly and Donna Mulholland use Beaver Lake and its history and prehistory as inspiration. The collection of songs on the CD, Once a River, was written by Donna and Kelly after they had been approached by the Association for Beaver Lake, or ABLE. Recently, I talked with Donna and Kelly about the CD. Is it true that the last song on this CD, What's Done Is Done, was the first one written?
It was. I'm glad you asked that, because that's really how this whole thing got started. First of all, the idea was the brainchild of Tony Mitlich from the organization called ABLE. And that's the Association for Beaver Lake Environment. And this man, he'd seen us doing our historical songs, and he had the idea that it would be beneficial to put together this album to benefit the lake and the watershed. Well, when he asked me, he didn't realize that I actually grew up on that lake and that I was 4 years old when they flooded the lake. And my folks had property right there in what is now LaRue. And so I had to, even though it was a great way to grow up, and kind of like paradise, you might say.
Mm-hmm. That lake was his ocean.
Right,
It was beautiful. But as an adult, I became more mindful of the other side of the equation, which is a reservoir, you know, because mm-hmm. there's a downside. There's a lot of environmental impact, and there's a lot of cultural impact. And so here
cemeteries
we are.
Cemeteries were flooded.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. And so and here we are being asked to devote half of, a year to this lake, which I have very mixed feelings about. And so it was really good timing because I really needed to sort that out. And this project gave me an opportunity to do that. And that first song is my attempt to actually sort this issue out in my own head.
He was testing the waters.
Right. And it's kind of, in retrospect, it seems kind of silly because it's so obvious now that it's all water. It doesn't matter whether it's in a bathtub or a creek or a river or a lake. It's all precious. And I guess, our generation, I guess you're the same age as me, we're probably the last generation that can live like there's no end to the water supply. Those days are over. All water is precious. And it's going to be the responsibility of every single citizen of Northwest Arkansas to be mindful of how we impact the watershed.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the reconciliation of those memories of your youth, because you have a lyric in that song that you refuse to let those memories be tainted. Those good times.
That's true. That's true. I want to hold on to that, of the paradise part.
Right.
And actually, it's helping me to fall in love with the lake again. Mm-hmm. I've always loved the lake, but, we still have that property. My family still has that cabin on Beaver Lake in LaRue.
And we love it.
And
yeah.
I love it. And
our son spent every single birthday party there. It's part of our life.
But this issue has I needed to reconcile those two things, and this album forced me to do it.
In 64, they flooded the land. At 4 years old, I could hardly understand. I've only the faintest memory of the cool, wide river beneath my feet. I never saw the forest cut down, folks lose their homes and cemeteries drown. Only saw that clear blue lake, and the joy of my childhood I'll not forsake.
Several years ago, someone asked me why Lost Bridge Marina was called Lost Bridge Marina. I did not know. Now, thanks to Once a River, I know. This is an amazing story.
Isn't that a fun story?
It is.
So this bridge was built in 1929, but no road, and it was to connect Garfield to Eureka? Yes.
It was made during boom times, I guess.
Yeah.
And, they built a very elaborate bridge, very substantial structure. And but then the Depression came and money ran out and they just never connected it to the feeder roads that would have, so the bridge sat there unused during its entire lifetime.
Yeah.
And then only in 1943, I believe, to be washed away by a flood.
So it sits at the bottom of Beaver Lake right now. So it's truly a lost bridge now.
It was never, ever used.
No,
apparently.
I think maybe some wagons
sure.
or some people would just kind of
pedestrians
would go use it.
But they never connected it to the roads on either side, so it would have been most difficult.
Way back the turn of the century, the Ozark Mountains were rugged and steep. Folks in Garfield needed a road to get to Eureka Springs, I am told. But the old wide river was deep and wide. If you wanted to get to the other side, you needed a boat and a wing and a prayer, cause there ain't no roads waiting over there. Mm-hmm. Lost Bridge.
Donna just had a really good idea of starting with that Flood of 27 song, which kind of gave, we thought, a perfect starting place for all this.
A lot of people don't realize that when the flood of 1927, when the Mississippi flooded, one-third of Arkansas was underwater, one-third of our state.
And some of it 30 feet deep. We're not talking like a small amount.
Yeah.
Yes.
It started the the great migration of folks moving up to Chicago up north.
Right.
And because of that, we have this series of dams all along the White River. And a lot of people don't realize that. Some people that have just moved to Northwest Arkansas don't even realize that the Beaver Lake is a reservoir.
That's true. It was, I guess that's another part, gets back to Able and why they wanted to do this in the first place. And by the way, it's not just Able. It's also the Beaver Water District, the Beaver Watershed Alliance, and the Ozark Water Watch. Those are our primary partners. And all four, you know, one thing, it's amazing that four different, completely separate environmental groups were so seamlessly able to work and collaborate together. And we saw this firsthand. We saw everybody meeting, and they're all just one happy family.
On the same page. About
I think
the same
that's course. Pretty unusual. Mm-hmm. You'd think they'd have some turf wars, you know, but not even slightly. They all are good friends, actually.
And the Arkansas Arts Council also matched all this.
And they matched the funds, and Shiloh Museum helped us out. So the idea was that Tony had was that so many people, we've been growing so fast in Northwest Arkansas, and most people have moved here recently, and they have no idea where that lake came from. And they don't really even know what the White River, what it was. And so they kind of take the lake for granted. But like I said earlier, we can't take the lake for granted anymore. So this is an opportunity for people to discover where this lake came from and through stories and songs feel somehow connected to it. And hopefully in that process, they will feel some ownership and some responsibility.
Almost every cove has a name. And almost every cove that is named is in Jay's song.
Well, I got me a friend and his name is Jay. Gonna paddle every inch of Beaver Lake, all 487 miles. Counting all the coves and counting all the isles. Guess it's gonna take him a while. Going down Joe's Creek, Ford's Creek, Horseshoe Bend, North Fort, Tanglewood, come around again. Kirk Hollow, Van Hollow, Tippecanoe, Mill Hollow, Penitentiary Hollow, and LaRue.
That's true. We had more fun with that. Jay Schneider is he is one of the interpreters at Hobbs Estate, and a good friend of ours. And he told us how he had these plans to explore. He was going to paddle every single inch of the lake, up and down every cove, and it's 487 miles. That's a long ways, you know. And it's going to take him a couple of years, but he's well into it now. So we thought that would be a fun song. So we just took a map of Beaver Lake and scoured every creek, every hollow, and all these names. There's a lot of colorful names, you know, Penitentiary Hollow and Escalapia Hollow. And
any idea what the story behind that is?
No.
Okay.
No, that's out of my neighborhood, you might say.
Out of my neighborhood.
Literally.
But anyway, so it was a tongue twister for sure. We just kind of rapid fire all these different places.
You know, you've done this project, and someone came to you because they had heard the other stories that you had told and gathered.
Right.
What if someone else comes up to you a year from now and says, you know what? I'd love for you to do a series of songs about Mount Sequoia or Garrison Avenue or Tahlequah, Oklahoma.
Yeah, bring it on. We're there.
That would be a dream.
We would love that.
You know, we travel widely, and that's traveling is okay, but our long range plan is trying to figure out how to be closer to home and how to serve our area. We like being connected to Northwest Arkansas, and we like our community, and so this is kind of falls perfectly into that plan, you might say, in that we're able to work very close to home and get more connected with our community, and hopefully it will grow from there because
regionally, it would be lovely.
That's our dream.
Which do you think would be more difficult, given that you're a perfectionist, Kelly, to write 11 songs about something that's pretty close to you that you've experienced, or if someone came to you and said, you know, I'd like you to write songs about Spiral Mounds, which maybe you haven't, well, you obviously don't have nearly the experience with.
You know, I think we're comfortable with any of that,
okay.
As long as we go to that place and have touchstones.
Sure.
I have to, for me to write a song, I have to go kind of just immerse myself in that space or that place.
Yeah, it's not enough just to tell a story. And by the way, Donna's doing most of the songwriting. I did write several of these songs, but the majority of them are written by Donna. And and she's very prolific. She's really amazing at what you just said about somebody telling you a story or showing you something important, and she can quickly move it into a song form, which is very mysterious to me.
Well, I think we collaborated on this one more than anyone we've done, because on many of them, I would have a song kind of etched out, and then I'd give it to him, and he'd rework it and add his flavor. And I'd say this is truly more of a total collaboration than anything we've ever done.
Maybe so.
On a lot of levels.
Maybe so. That's true.
And maybe that's because you did grow up there. Your influence on the Cedar song, it's my favorite song on the CD, but we went and kayaked. We needed to take some photos, and we kayaked among these cedar trees in the lake along the shore that were just had been there, dead, flooded trees for 50 years. And Kelly said, I used to canoe and fish in these very trees. Those same trees have been there for 50 years. And the Cedar song is kind of like the giving tree. It's these trees having the birds perch in their branches and the fish lay their eggs in their roots. And he inspired that as we were out there in those very trees.
Donna and Kelly Mulholland are the duo Still on the Hill. And their new CD is titled Once a River. They'll perform songs from the CD at several locations in the near future, including May 27th at Walton Arts Center Star Theater as part of the Artisphere celebration. Other dates include June 20th at Ozark Folkways in Winslow, June 28th at Shiloh Museum in Springdale, and July 26th at Hobbs State Park. You can learn much more at stillonthehill.com.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
And it is time once again for our Sunday morning montage.
Didn't have to think hard about this one.
Not really. Today is Mother's Day. It also happens to be the 100th anniversary of Mother's Day.
Yeah.
So, of course, we chose to highlight and honor mothers in this morning's montage.
Now, there are some times when whoever is putting together the montage, the subject, takes a little research. Like, oh, can I get 9 or 10 songs or audio clips that have to do with this? This was not difficult at all.
No, I put together this one. You know, we kind of take turns, rotate mm-hmm. through the staff. And I put together this one. I mean, everybody has a mom.
Yes.
And you know, in every TV show and movie, not in every, but in most
just
of them,
about, yeah.
There's a mother.
All right.
So, and lots of singer-songwriters like to honor their moms also.
Of course.
As they should.
Yes.
So, here are 12 clips about moms.
Oh, mama, like the roses, she'd grow them in the yard.
Oh, Beaver, of course you will. Your father did very well in school, and I got good grades. You had a grandfather that was a professor. Why, he was considered practically a genius.
Yeah, it's nice having all that s'more stuff in the family, Mom.
It don't gotta be Mother's Day or your birthday for me to just call and say, I wanna scream so loud for you. I'm so proud of you, and let me tell you what I'm about to do. You know I love you.
From the gate, we've safely delivered a son at looks like a 6, but we're told it's 4:24 p.m. Local time in London today. Her Royal Highness and her child are doing well. Among the signatures.
Thank you.
A girl.
Yes.
Mini-me.
Oh, honey. Watch Mommy. It's very simple. Just open your mouth wide and the doctor puts the little stick in. You see, honey?
Mother, tell your children not to look my way. Tell your children not to hear my words, what they mean, what they say. Mother. Mother!
Now get me a cigarette and give me some details. You want one, don't you? I'd rather have you do it in front of me than behind my back.
We made it, Mother! Mother!
To see if you could identify the 12 clips we used in our Mother's Day montage, go to our website, ozarksatlarge.com.
And special bonus points, Christina, for not using anything from Psycho.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
We're on the move during the next Pipe Dreams program with a sampler of some of the sounds the Pipe Dreams tour group will be enjoying on location in Switzerland. Premier Swiss soloist Lionel Rogge plays Vidor Bach and some of his own works in Geneva. We'll sample the American-built Fisk pipe organ at the cathedral in Lausanne. Enjoy an intriguing and picturesque evocation of an alpine storm. And drop in at the Museum of Mechanical Musical Instruments in Savin and delight in the liturgical tangos of iconoclastic composer Guy Beauvais. These but a few of the treats in store when you share, vicariously, in our Travels in Switzerland, this week on Pipe Dreams from American Public Media. I'm Michael Barone. I hope you'll be listening.
Pipe Dreams can be heard Sunday nights beginning at 9 on 91.3 FM.
A week from today, Cletus Got Shot will be performing at the Block Street Party in downtown Fayetteville. Last week, the trio stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio to play a couple of original tunes, including this one, which is titled Work These Hands.
On your feet, you probably feel the way I do. If you live my life from day to day, you probably say, Lord, why me? Work these hands to bleed, 'cause I got mine to feed. Work these hands to bleed, and I say, Lord, why? To God for a shirt on my back, my wife by my side, food on our plate. I try my best to keep my mouth shut, and I'll do my part. These hands. I said, Lord, why me?
That was Work These Hands by Cletus Gottschott. The trio will be performing on the Apple Blossom Brewing Company-sponsored stage next Sunday at 8 at the Block Street Block Party in downtown Fayetteville. The party begins at 11 a.m. and events will wrap up around 9 o'clock. Also want to mention that Cletus Gottschott will be playing Friday evening at the Artisphere 2014 celebration on Tyson Plaza, which is right in front of the Walton Arts Center.
Right there on Dixon Street.
For more information, you can search Cletus Gottschott on Facebook.
Walton Arts Center's Artisphere, Arkansas's Arts and Nature Festival, welcomes the contemporary dance company Trey McIntyre Project May 16th. Other events next week include a community dance at Wilson Park, an evening of film and dance at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, and on stage at Walton Arts Center. Ticket and information available at artisphere.org.
The 6th annual KUAF Fulbright Chamber Music Festival begins May 15th at 7:30 p.m. in the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall in Fayetteville. U of A Music Department faculty and guest artists will perform Brahms' Horn Trio, Rutter's Sweet Antique for flute and piano, and the Shostakovich piece Trio in E minor. Admission and following reception are free. Fulbrightsummermusic.uark.edu for more information.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Winslow.
Mm-hmm. Just down south of Fayetteville.
That's right, or just kind of north and west of Fort Smith.
Yeah, true, true.
Okay.
All right. Weekend Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
As we've been mentioning throughout the hour this morning, it is Mother's Day.
Yep.
And I know a lot of people like to take their mothers out for Mother's Day brunch.
A tradition, yes.
Well, I know of a harpist that plays the harp.
Which is about a good thing for a harpist
right,
to do,
right,
yes.
Right. Just about every Sunday. So we're going to end today's show with a medley of harp music from Beth Stockdale. She plays at the Guest House Inn and Suites in Fayetteville, and she'll be there today at 11.